Yeah, and in communicating with you via Facebook recently, I found out that I might have been at the second ever Algebra Suicide Show.
Yeah, that's right. We had our first show on like Labor Day 1983, I think it was, around that time. Then we played at the University of Chicago, the Reynolds Club. Not much after that, right around that time of our first EP that came out with True Romance and the World Fair. That was the title song.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, and I remember seeing you. I was a student at the University of Chicago, and it was in Reynolds Club, one of the kind of student hangout areas. And it was a very memorable performance. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen on stage before, and yet it was recognizable as sort of pop at the same time. It was pop, but it wasn't pop, and it kind of blew my mind. I hadn't really been exposed to stuff that was kind of pushing the boundaries of what could be considered pop music.
Well, thanks. That really appreciate that. It was, I mean, the whole focus was Lydia's poems, but at the same time, I was always trying to create interesting and sort of atmospheric, moody, unobtrusive music around that would not get in the way of the words, because those are really the focal point, but that would, you know, complement what the poetry in an artistic kind of way. That was sort of the aim, at least. Whether we achieved that, who knows?
Yeah, I think I would give a thumbs up to achieving that. And the fact that you're still remembered in Europe, and just recently a record was released out of Germany, I believe.
Right, the DOM label in Germany released a live CD from our shows over there in 1990. We played about, I think, around 10 shows or so in 1990 in Germany, France, Switzerland, Belgium, and then we went back also in 1991 and played about the same number in mostly Germany and France and Belgium that time. And yeah, we had a very good following in those countries. We had released on Body Records of Belgium several CDs around that time. And so, yeah, I don't know, for whatever reason, it seemed like in Europe they really appreciated what we were doing.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's kind of the old story of your nobody's in your hometown,
yeah.
But you go out of town and go way out of town, go across the ocean, and everybody is interested. That's a funny thing about a lot of Chicago bands from that time period too. I remember the same thing sort of happened with Big Black. They were. I remember Steve Albini used to. I'd see him at shows, and he would beg me to come and see their show because they were one of the most hated bands in Chicago. And then all of a sudden, they were big in England, and then everybody wanted to hang out with them in Chicago, which is
right.
Just one of those funny things to notice. And I think in his case, Steve Albini got a little bitter about it, and he was like, yeah, why wouldn't you come to my shows when we weren't cool?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you ever felt that way coming back to Chicago.
You know, I didn't, because in Chicago, we did have a good following when we played live shows. I don't think we necessarily got the, you know, the publicity from the press and all, maybe, but the people were really very supportive of what we were doing. We always had good turnouts and good times at our shows in Chicago. So it's just, you know, sometimes the press doesn't pick up on things for whatever reason. But, you know, in some ways it helped us, because it forced us to go outside of Chicago. Because, you know, we were getting no real media recognition in Chicago. So in some ways that made us go outside, and we did better. Also in the Midwest, we played like in Pittsburgh, we played Cleveland and Milwaukee. We would do pretty well in those places too, Cincinnati. And so I guess in some ways, you know, I think if we would have got more recognized in Chicago, these other things wouldn't have happened, and I'm glad that they did happen. So it's not a bad thing necessarily.
Yeah. I want to go back in time a little bit just to introduce you to listeners a little bit more, because you've been around the Chicago scene for a long, long time. I remember I wasn't living in Hyde Park at this time, but I talked with people who lived in Hyde Park in the mid-70s, and they said that you were a DJ on WHPK there in
right.
Obama's old digs in
right.
Hyde Park, Illinois. And you were playing Sex Pistols before anybody else was.
Yeah, I was it was kind of funny. I remember going up to, it was also in Reynolds Club where WHBK was located. I went up there and said that I wanted to do a radio show. This is like say, like 1978 or whatever. And I wanted to play only punk rock music. And so they gave me a show, and it was like on at 3 a.m. till 7 a.m. or something like that. You know, they put me at the worst possible time slot. But I thought, heck, I don't care. I'm going to get on the radio and play this music because for me, it was the most exciting thing ever. So I did that for a while. And then Bart Lazar became program director of WHBK, and he put me on then on a Friday night slot, like at 7 p.m., like a great slot because he really liked what you know, the kind of music I was playing and stuff. But yeah, back in those days, there was only 10 watt stations, so who knows who really even listened, but it was a lot of fun.
No, you're remembered by people as being the punk rock, the guy who introduced punk rock to the south side of Chicago. So you're
up. I'll say in Chicago, the station that really started things was WZRD, associated with Northeastern Illinois University, and they would. They're the first ones, as far as I remember, that played punk rock on any college radio station back in, like, mid-late 70s. So I was kind of copying them, but there was nothing like that at HBK at that time.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. I almost, actually, to digress a little bit, I went to WHPK as a young 11-year-old or 12-year-old in 1975 and met some DJ there. I can't remember his name. I wish I could. Uh-huh. Who was just so amazed at my knowledge of weird, arcane 70s prog rock records. He wanted to put me on the air there, and we kind of made plans to do it. And I actually got a third class radio station operator's license.
Right, you had to get that back then to get on the radio.
I went through all that as a 12-year-old, and then somehow I don't know. I think this DJ went off to do that record label that put out the Suicide Commandos and the early Pere Ubu stuff, and it was Blank Records or something. Uh-huh. And left me in a lurch.
Too bad I didn't connect with you back then. Boy, that sounds great.
But I didn't. I knew nothing about punk rock at that time. I was just, you know, I was into Curved Air and all this, you know, and hard stuff and all these just arcane. It's a lot of them English bands.
Yeah.
In the time period, I don't know how I got into all that stuff. That's a whole story of its own. But let's go on with what you did in Chicago. You ended up in a band called the Psycho Capones at some point.
Right. Yeah. Actually, during my University of Chicago days, I was in a band called the Trouble Boys, and we played like around, you know, our big claim to fame was we opened for the Ramones at Ida Noyes Hall in 30 years ago, actually, in 1980. And so I played with that band for a bit, and then after that I was in a band called Psycho Capones, and we played out of the north side of the club. This was around 1981 or so, 1982. We used to dress up in gangster outfits and drive, or basically had a hearse that would transport our equipment in, so it was really pretty cool. We met the guy, Dave Vanian, from the Damned one time, because and he was talking to me about how he had a hearse in London, and so that was kind of cool. So we had some shows then, and then in 83 is when Algebra Suicide started, and that went to 93.
Yeah. So I believe that I saw that Trouble Boys show, opening for the Ramones, and had no idea that I was... I did not know you at the time, and it didn't really register, but now it's all sort of like falling into place.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience to be able to, you know, play with a band of that stature. It was you know, just like a dream come true, really. And it was you know, they had just released the album with Phil Spector, and so they were really great at that time. And the other cool thing about it was they were playing the Park West right after that University of Chicago show for like four nights in a row. They put us on the guest list every night, so I got to see the Ramones like 4 days in a row, basically.
Wow, and I bet every show was fantastic too, because I saw the Ramones a bunch of times in the early 80s, and one time I saw them, I wish I could remember the name of the suburb of Boston that I saw them in an actual rock and roll high school gym. And bus. For some reason, there were only about 25, 30 people. It was a total bust. But they put on the show of their lives. I mean, it was just the same amazing Ramon show that I saw them play to hundreds and hundreds of people elsewhere. And for 30, 40 people, we were treated to just the most amazing Ramon show. And we're right there screaming back at them right at the stage. It was an incredible experience.
Yeah, they were such a great live band, and yes, it was quite an honor to play with them at that show and then see them so many times.
Yeah, and now you are. I remember the Psycho Capones too. There was something else I wanted to ask you about Psycho Capones. I remember seeing the hearse with something about opening for Duran Duran. I think that was Duran Duran's first tour of the U.S. And I don't, 1982 maybe, or 81, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It was right in that era, uh-huh. And, I mean, we were kind of a band we were following in a way musically, sort of from television and Velvet Underground kind of influence. So we tried to have interesting guitar stuff going on with, cool words and stuff like that, and then we had this visual element of looking like gangsters. We thought from Chicago, looking like gangsters was kind of a natural.
That's true.
So yeah, it was a pretty good band, I thought. Actually, it didn't didn't really go anywhere per se, but I made a MySpace site because I just thought the songs were pretty good, actually. And Scott Benson was the primary songwriter singer in the band, and I was wrote some songs and sang some songs as well.
Cool. Well, I want to play some more Algebra Suicide. I'm going to play, I'm going to play In Bed With Boys, which I think was the first Algebra Suicide song that really, I just blew me away somehow. Like, to me, that and Romeo Void's Never Say Never were two songs that finally got into my head that, hey, women talk about sex too, and they can be a little brutal about the things they say about us. So, but done with a nice bit of humor too, that was always Lydia's trademark.
Yeah, definitely. It was there. Always that element of humor there. It was. We're serious, of course, about it, but we also tried to have fun with it, and Lydia was very good at portraying that.
So I'm going to actually play the version from the live album, which is a little different from the one that I grew up on, but I really like this live version. In fact, this whole live album is just really cool to me because I know the original versions, and they're just a little bit different, and there's a little different energy going on, and so even some of the arrangements are slightly different, and it's like hearing the songs anew for me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that and stay on the line. I'm going to come back and talk with you a little bit more and kind of bring things up to date.
Okay,
and let you do some plugs too, because I want people to know how to get in touch with you and get these great records from you or wherever they can get them from.
Sure.
So, but first, Algebra Suicide doing In Bed With Boys.
And this next one's about my favorite place to be after an Algebra Suicide concert, In Bed With Boys. Welcome to dance if you want to. When I was young and a critic in my crib, I knew Spaniards wanted sleep, while Americans merely needed it. Now, on warm summer days, boys nip at my neck. Thank you.
Okay, I'm back with Don Hedeker, who is one half of the band that you just heard a song of. Algebra Suicide is the name of the band from Chicago between 1983 and 1993. They were doing their thing. And we've talked a lot about Algebra Suicide and the legacy of Algebra Suicide and how that band was well appreciated in Germany, if not in, not so much in the U.S. and in their hometown. But I want to bring things up to date a little bit, because you've been in bands, in all kinds of bands in Chicago. And during, at the same time that you were doing Algebra Suicide, I think you were in a band called The Bouncing Balls.
Yes, that came after. I started Bouncing Ball. So Algebra Suicide went to 1993. And then me and Lydia kind of parted ways. And then right after that, about a year or so, I started Bouncing Balls, which was kind of getting back to my Trouble Boys roots, I guess. You know, playing like punk rock, kind of like punk rock and roll, sort of like the Dead Boys, the Heartbreakers, bands of that style. And I had that going for about, 4 years or so. And towards the end of that is when I started the Polkaholics. 1997 is when I started the Polkaholics. Because I was getting a little bit, it just felt like the rock scene was so serious. Everybody was so glum, and polka music seemed like the perfect antidote to this. And I discovered polka music partially through just going through thrift stores and finding these polka records where, you know, I'd look at these records and everybody on the records like smiling and, you know, having a polka party. And I thought, what is this all about, you know? And so I bought a bunch of these records, started listening to the music, and I was like, wow, this music is much wilder than I could have imagined, even.
And
so
there's
that's kind of how it started, at least.
And there's a huge history of polka in Chicago, too, and polka artists.
I knew nothing about this history. And the funny thing is, when I learned about it, you know, I realized that the Division Street, where Phyllis's Musical Inn is, for example, was like the primary polka strip in the 1950s, 1940s, in that era. And I thought, wow, Algebra Suicide, we played at Phyllis's all the time. I mean, I was playing in the same territory as, you know, this polka history. And so it was like, wow. And I lived right around there at that time, too. And it was like, wow, this just makes so much sense for me to get into polka.
That's awesome. There's actually a long-standing band in San Francisco called Polkaside.
Yeah.
Who've been doing kind of punk polka stuff since the mid-80s, really.
Right. They are the kings. They are the absolute kings. And one of the biggest thrills for me musically is we've played with them in Chicago. We played with them in San Francisco around 2000. We played with them some shows in the Midwest. Meeting those guys and girl and playing shows with them was unbelievable. They are so amazing. Most amazing band, I think, in probably the history of music. It's just was such a treat to be able to meet and play with them.
Yeah, and Brave Combo, too. They dabble in polka every once in a while.
Right, right. But I think polka side, you know, they've got the they've got the image, they've got the playing, everything. I mean, they're just amazing, just amazing band.
Well, I would like to play a little bit of the Polkaholics, and I'm going to be playing a song off of a recent Polkaholics record called Wally, a polka rock opera. And it really is an amazing rock opera. It tells this whole story of Lil Wally through music and through 12 songs on the record. And I'd like to play a song called Polka Superstar. So maybe you could set up that song a little bit about what
sure.
it's about.
I mean, we had played some shows. Lil Wally was like the polka king of Chicago. And in many ways, I would say the polka king, you know, everywhere. He was so influential in the polka scene, and his music was so tremendous. So we played some shows with him in Chicago, and after he died, I thought, you know, why don't we write a whole CD about him and his life? His story is so interesting. And so that's sort of how Wally came about. It was the idea of, you know, telling his story through these songs. I mean, and the superstar one, it was just a natural. It's like Wally was the polka superstar, and so it just made sense to use that riff and sort of base the song on that.
Okay, so without further ado, let's play some Polkaholics. And you're currently playing with Polkaholics. They haven't broken up yet, have they?
Nope, you were playing, in fact, this Friday at the Lincoln Square Bowling Alley.
Oh, and that's, I saw you there one time with my wife, and she got it. She almost got beaned by a beer bottle, but it was all in good fun, and the person who threw it apologized, but it's a great memory. That's somehow in the spirit of polka to have beer bottles be flying around the place while the band is playing.
You know, in fact, Polka Side has a song called "Don't Throw Beer Bottles at the Band" for that very reason.
But the band can throw beer bottles at the crowd. So.
I guess.
So anyway, let's get back to playing Polka Superstar. This is about a real Polka Superstar, Lil Wally, who's no longer with us, but is not forgotten and has a million records in thrift stores probably all over the world to attest to his superstardom. Thanks. Right, that was, of course, the amazing Polkaholics from Chicago, Illinois, doing Polka Superstar, and the little bit of Jesus Superstar thrown in there for good measure. Just really fun stuff.
It just seemed like it had to be done. It was just it was just out there, and we just had to do it, and it seemed to work. So we thought, what the heck.
So you're still playing with the Polkaholics. You're playing at the old digs, the bowling alley on Lincoln, where I used to try to get every week to do sort of we weren't really a league, but we were, it's sort of like a social club, because that is the most amazing bowling alley in Chicago right now. A lot of good bowling alleys
They're gone.
But that one lingers on, and it's staying the course. It's staying cool and old, and does it still have that mural?
Yeah. It's pretty much the same inside as it's probably been for, I don't know, who the heck knows, 40, 50 years or
wow.
It's, you know, one of these old time bowling alleys, so it matches our, you know, our gestalt real well. I think we're kind of like an old time crazy band, and it's a old time crazy bowling alley. So it's always so much fun to play there.
So this is your time to plug away. I want you to give as many email, or not email addresses, but web addresses as are appropriate, and tell people how they can get these great records. Because to be honest, I have looked for Algebra Suicide stuff in San Francisco record stores. It's really hard to find. So probably the best way is going to be via the internet or mail or something like that. So lay it on us. How do we get this great music?
For Algebra Suicide, I have lots of copies of The Secret Like Crazy on CD, and so if you go to, there's an eBay store that you can go to, and then you can buy it with PayPal or whatever, and that's one way. I also have a MySpace site for Algebra Suicide. Just go to MySpace Algebra Suicide. That also has information. So that's the best way to get Algebra Suicide, the Secret Like Crazy CD, which is basically, Secret Like Crazy CD is a combination of our early EPs, our first two EPs, as well as the Big Skin cassette, which came out. So it's primarily, you know, up to mid 80s Algebra Suicide.
Yeah, I kind of think of it as
this live CD. It's put out by the German record label DOM. So probably just googling them. I should put a link on the MySpace site for that to get that. Then, with regard to Polkaholics, it's just www.thepolkaholics.com, and our website there's information about merchandise, how you can buy it either directly from me or through an eBay store. And I should also mention we're also on CD Baby, so you can also find the Pokeholics. And also Algebra Suicide comes to it from CD Baby. So if you go to cdbaby.com and just do a search, you know, look up Algebra Suicide or the Pokeholics, you can get them. And that's directly from me as well. So those are probably the best ways to get our material. And also at the Pokeholics site, there's my email address. It's just pokeholics@gmail.com, so you can just email me, and I'm happy to answer any questions or direct you or whatever. So,
and just to remind people, the me here is Don Hedeker, who's a longtime promoter of good music and good vibes in Chicago, Illinois. And
well,
continues to
much.
Do so. And you also have a MySpace page for some of your other bands.
Right, I have a MySpace page for Bouncing Balls and also for Psycho Capones. And so you can listen to songs from both of those bands. You know, again, if you find those interesting, just let me know at pokeholics@gmail.com and I can put some of that material into your hands. Bouncing Balls, at least I have CDs of Bouncing Balls as well.
Wow! Yeah, cool stuff coming from the man who introduced punk rock to the South Side of Chicago.
A dubious honor, but I'll take it nonetheless.
Oh, I think it's a great honor, and
yeah, no, it is. I'm kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. Just come out sometime to San Francisco and lay the Polkaholics upon us.
I hope we can do it because, as I mentioned, we played with Polkaside at Bottom of the Hill and also with Big Lou, the accordion princess. We played a show with both of those acts, Bottom of the Hill. It was like 1999 or 2000. It's amazing to think, wow, it was like 10 years ago, but it wasn't that long ago, I guess.
Wow.
But we got to do it again because it was such a great time and wonderful environment and a lot of fun.
Well, awesome. Thanks for speaking to us here at Pirate Cat Radio 87.9 FM in San Francisco today, Don. And I'm going to next play another Algebra Suicide song that has one of the most intriguing titles for me, and maybe you can give me a story or something that goes along with this song. It's That Small Convulsion. Of course, that's from the Swoon CD.
I'll be honest, I don't even remember what song that is.
Okay.
So I don't have a good story for that, unfortunately, but I'll give you a story for the title of Swoon.
Okay.
As I recall, we were wondering about what should we title this next CD that we were working on, and Lydia came up with the idea of having a Name That CD contest at Lower Links, where we used to play a lot. And so one night we played there, we had this, you know, this contest, and people wrote down different titles for our proposed CD, and the person's name was Ken, I forget his last name, he came up with Swoon, and Lydia liked that a lot, and so that's how that got titled. But I'll have to listen to that song, That Small Convulsion. I honestly don't remember which one that is.
Okay, well, you'll have a chance to if you have a computer and can listen in, or you can podcast the show later on and figure it out in absentia or so, however you want to say it.
I'm so sorry about that.
That's okay. No problem. Great talking with you. Good tidings, and take care of yourself, and take care of Chicago for us.
All right. Thanks, Russ. So good to be on your show. Thank you.
Thanks.